Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 19th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 53 of Who's Reading the Organon. We're going to do a special show today, and it is a recap of aphorisms number 1 through 17. Vera is on the line with me. Hi, Vera.
Hi, Debbie.
It's going to be
everyone.
Fun day. We're just going to play it by ear.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to see if we can follow Hahnemann's view from an overview rather than the detail view. See where we get
that
to with it.
That sounds good. I know as an artist who's painted and done a lot of artwork in my lifetime that we often go in really, really deep into the details and our eye is on the paper, but we need to pull back and get a distance and take an overview of what's happening on the page and decide where how to go back into it. And I think this is going to be very helpful to everyone. And going to do a few short little quotes today. One is Winnie the Pooh, and he says, "Did you ever stop to think and forget to start again?" And this is something that just gave me a belly laugh, so maybe we can restart our reboot, because we've had to reboot a couple of things today. And then the other one is an unknown author that just says, "Invest a few moments in thinking. It will pay good interest." And financially, hopefully that will be true. And in our knowledge base, it will be good as well. And it will cause some, no boring words, just a lot of interest in something that stimulates us to think. So we begin with aphorism number 1, and I'll let you start off with that.
Okay, so we're looking with the shorter aphorisms, it'll be pretty straightforward. We're looking at the main punch of the aphorism. So here the main punch is, the physician is there to cure the sick, basically. That's the high and only mission of the physician. So the question that arises from that, several questions. What is cure? That's the first. So aphorism 2 gives us cure. The highest ideal of cure is rapid, gentle, permanent, reliable, harmless, uncomprehensible principles. So now it reminds me of this game where you go around between people and you start with one word and then the next person adds another word. And the second person has to say the two words and the third person has to say the two that came before and then the third. So here what we're doing is something along those lines, the way I see it. So the physician's only mission is to cure. Cure is rapid, gentle, permanent, harmless, reliable, incomprehensible principle.
Right. There's another game also where one says a one or two lines of a story and then the next person continues with the story. So until everyone in the group has created an entire book. So there's two kinds of games that you can do that. And I know he wasn't playing a game, but Hahnemann is leading us in a direction. He's bringing us along in the thinking process. So what is the other kind of questions that come from number 1 and number 2?
Well, let's see. Now we're going to see the physician's only mission is to restore the sick to health. Well, how do we do that? And here we have 3. We do that if we can see what needs to be cured in diseases. if we can see what's curative in medicine, if we can match the two together according to clearly defined principles, and then if we choose the best remedy based on all that, in the proper dose, in the proper potency, with the right repeating. Okay, so that's how we do it. And that actually, aphorism three, I see it as presenting the entire structure of the organon, the entire structure of the thought. And we see even in at the end of aphorism three, he takes us back, he says, he is a true practitioner of the healing art. So the physician's high and only mission, to cure, and this is how we do it.
Mm-hmm. So we need to learn what needs to be cured, and we have to learn what the principles are. Then we have to find out how to choose the remedy, and then we go always returning back to number one. Why are we doing this? We're doing this because this is our mission.
We're basically matchmakers for health.
Ah, we're matchmakers.
Have I got the disease for you?
Have I got it? Well, you know what? What have we said before also? The last thing that we said in aphorism number 16 or 17, I said love and marriage. So it is a marriage. We're trying to find a match. That's very cute. So now we're going on to what?
Okay.
Number, are we still on four?
So number four.
Okay.
Let's see what question can arise from three. Is there anything else that we know that doesn't relate to what's curative in medicines, and it doesn't relate to what needs to be cured, and it doesn't relate to the choice of remedy? So number four takes us a bit outside that structure and says we need to know, it's common sense, we need to know if this guy, like one patient I had, spends all his days working in a meatpacking refrigerator, well, that's an obstacle to cure. That deranges health and causes disease. So four is taking us a little bit beyond. It's saying, don't be just closed inside the framework of choice of homeopathic remedy. Keep your senses awake. Keep your common sense active. And make sure that there's nothing preventing cure. Okay, so one is highest mission is to cure. Two is telling us what to cure. Telling us what cure is, rapid, gentle, permanent, blah, blah, blah. Three is telling us, and how do we do this? Four is telling us, what else do we need to know?
This is really coming out really cool, because one thing that I think about is a reporter. And a reporter, they have to, when they're writing their article, the very first thing they have to tell who, what, where, how, you know, those the four questions. The four questions. he's doing that at the very beginning. He's a fantastic reporter and giving us the layout of the land so that we, you know, the headline and writing a really good article that's going to grab you and it's going to give you the information that you need to know. And on the last thing that you mentioned, you said, for number three, you said, is there anything else that doesn't relate? And that reminded me of what we as homeopaths do in the interview, where we do ask, is there anything else? He's teaching us from the very start how to go through the process. So number four is the what?
Number the four is the what else? What else outside the structure,
okay.
I think. And number five, start zooming us in that we've got what's to be cured, but do we know how it came about? Four will relate to external causes that derange health, cause disease. Five seems to refer to external and internal causes. Like the first one is the exciting cause, which often could be external and relates to acute disease. And the second is fundamental cause, which could probably be something much more deep-seated, possibly hereditary, genetic, relating to chronic disease. So here we have some more information we can get from the patient to find out about the exciting cause or fundamental cause. So four gives us a knowledge of what deranges health and causes disease and how to remove them. And five takes us in a little bit deeper.
It's sort of like a subtopic to four, kind of explodes out more from this knowledge of derangement, and there's two kinds?
It could be. But you've got four, I think, relates much more to maintaining cause. something that's keeping disease going. But he'll elaborate more. The thing is that both 4 and 5 are talking to us about cause, okay? Cause, whether it's something that's maintaining, whether it's something that's triggering. Okay, so if we look back again, we've got cure the sick. Rapidly, gently, permanently, reliably, on easily comprehensible principles. This is how you do it. What's to be cured in diseases, what's curative in medicines, how to put the two together to matchmake, how to choose the remedy, and how to administer it. But then you've got to check nothing is maintaining it, for nothing is keeping this person sick, affecting it. And 5, you need to look for exciting cause and fundamental cause. And while you're looking for those things, your patient's habits, moral, intellectual character, etc., all those may come into play as being related to the exciting cause and fundamental cause. 6 brings us to focus.
Okay.
Part of what's interesting is 5 funnels out. You know, we're looking for exciting cause, fundamental cause, so 5, we're looking very broadly at our patient,
mm-hmm.
but 6 focuses in. It says you can't stay in that broad view in order to find what needs to be cured.
Right.
6 focuses us in and tells us only take only the deviations from the former healthy state of the patient.
This was the key aphorism, to take the deviations.
So this is key to focus.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, we want to see what the patient's healthy state is. So we need to know more about their background, how they are when they're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, in order to treat the disease, we need to say, so what's changed? What's the difference? You know, like some people, when they're healthy, they're quiet, and when they're sick, they can't stop talking. Some people, when they're healthy, they talk the whole time. When they're sick, there's total
mm-hmm.
silence.
Right. So I'm still with the reporter concept. So number five, you're the investigative reporter, and you're looking
mm-hmm.
at all the possibilities, and you have to go check, is there something in the home? Is there, you know, house MD, they always send somebody secretively into the house to check whether there's a toxin or something leaking. And
mm-hmm.
then in number 6, now you take it back to the lab, and you're going to narrow in to see what has changed in that life to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Now, 6 says, now focus on what's changed from the former healthy state. 6 tells us, look at what's changed. And 7 tells us, now we know what's changed, as we proceed with a case, we see if that disappears, if the person moves back to their previous healthy state. If they do, we know we've cured.
Okay.
If they don't, they haven't.
Right. Very often you have a case where the person comes with the chief complaint, and they come back after the remedy, and many things have changed, but the chief complaint is still there.
In which case, we've still got stuff there, so something inside has not been taken care of.
And so number 7 is just telling us that we still have more work to do in that case?
7 is telling us that the symptoms show us what the inner disease is. The symptoms are the expression of the inner disease. So that's what we have to relate to, the symptoms of the sick state, the totality of the disease symptoms. And 8 says, once the totality of the disease symptoms has disappeared, and there are all kinds of interpretations, let's just take it again
okay.
from our aerial view. The disease symptom has disappeared, therefore the inner sickness is healed. As long as we see, obviously, if we see signs
mm-hmm.
of health. I mean, you could say someone is very talkative in sickness, and if you just starve them, don't give them anything to drink, when they die, they won't be talking anymore.
Well, that's a
but that's not
complete,
help.
Complete cure. Cure from this life. Okay.
That's right.
So now we want them to be well and healthy, functioning beings in this world. To do that, we need to take a look at, we've taken the investigative reporting, we've taken all the clues, and we're now focusing in on what's changed. And then we now say, if those those symptoms have been gone from all the clues that we've picked up, then the inside, the inner disorder, disease, dysfunction, derangement is now also healed. Is that correct?
I think that's the direction. And we're not doing interpretations now. We're just looking at the basic structure of the aphorisms and how one builds on the other. So we've got a structure so far that Hahnemann says this is what the physician has to do. This is an explanation of what it is. This is how to do it. These are the kind of things that can stand in the way, aphorism 4 and 5.
I'm trying to put all my little questions together.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
Then how do we focus in to see the disease state? And we're looking for deviations from health. How do we know our patient is on the way to cure when the symptoms are disappearing when they go? And 9 is a reminder. What's it all about? What's the purpose? Why is this all so important? So our indwelling, reason-gifted mind can freely employ this living, healthy instrument for the higher purposes
of our
existence.
So he returns back to number 1 with number 5?
No, with number 9. Number 9, he's going to a place of earlier beginnings. Number 1, he's telling us, because it's not the physician's highest aim. Who's reading the organon, the patient or the physician? It's the person who is treating is
right.
Reading the organon. Speaking to us, I think that it's a very interesting exercise to cross out the word the physicians and put instead of that your high and only mission is to restore the sick to health. Okay? And for each and every one of us to try that one on for size. My high and only mission is to restore the sick to health. It's a very heavy mantle. It's something that is worth experimenting with. Partly in determining your life choice and choosing to be a homeopath.
Mm-hmm. To put the you or the I into the equation. So on number 9, you're saying it is not going back to number 1.
To my mind, number 9 is bringing us to a deeper place of why. Why do we restore the sick to health? What's the purpose of it? But if homeopaths have a Hippocratic oath, it's number 1.
There's a whole article on HWC about that. I encourage people to take a look at that.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, part of 9 is telling us we have within us the vital force, this immaterial force, which is supposed to keep this living, healthy instrument, supposed to keep it both alive and healthy. And now we're moving into, well, how does this vital force operate? What's its function? Okay. So, part of this also, because Hahnemann has talked about a vital force that expresses itself in symptoms. So it's a bit like if we read some writings of an author, and then we thought, well, we want to know who this author is. We want to know as much as we can about the author in order to understand why they wrote this way. So Hahnemann is showing us something of the function of the vital force, and now he's going into, well, we want to know a bit more about the vital force. And he does this through the aphorisms and through the footnotes a lot.
So he's
in
introducing this concept of the vital force as being a part of who we are. And then he's going to elaborate on that.
Well, first in 10, he's saying no vital force, no life. So 11, he's saying no vital force, no life, no sickness.
So he's giving us the big question, life and death, and he's explaining how it works, but he's explaining what you said a little bit earlier, that certainly one way to remove any illness or derangement is for death to occur. We don't want to go to the nth degree, and we want to actually bring the individual back to life. And to do that, we have to find out what is the enlivening force.
It reminds me, there was an advert in England many years ago for some form of painkiller, and they showed someone being shot in the head, and the voiceover says, there are different ways of curing a headache, and then you see the kind of fast backwards and the guy's being offered some pills instead. As you said, when death occurs naturally or unnaturally, it is a way of curing some problems. But getting back to the point,
that's not the most gentle. It might be rapid, but it might or might not be rapid, but it is permanent. But we want the gentle way. So now we're looking at Do we move swiftly from 10 to 11?
So 10 is no vital force, no life. 11 is when there is sickness, it's only in the vital force. So it's kind of, all of this is understanding, like in 9 we have the purpose of the vital force, introducing the vital force and its purpose. In 10 we have no vital force, no life. And 11 we have, you should know that the vital force is your patient. The vital force is the part that falls ill, not the physical body, but the inner dynamic.
Well, not only does the vital force fall ill, but the actual physical body does fall ill as well, does it not?
Not as well. This is exactly the point where our conventional brainwashing kicks in. And even if we have said, both of us, sentences that are not what you said just now, we tend to default back to that. It's not that the body falls ill as well. It's that the vital force brings out the symptoms in the body as an expression of the vital force of sickness.
Okay, this is really a good one. This is like a home run for you.
So our patient and our guide of symptoms.
So
okay.
We're up to number 12?
Okay. We're up to 13.
What did we do on 12? We had number 11 was the sicknesses in the vital force. And what is
mm-hmm.
number 12?
And 12 is showing us how the vital force is producing the symptoms. And the symptoms, because the symptoms are our guide, you remember, was it Jiminy Cricket, let your conscience be your guide? Well, so let the symptoms be your guide. The symptoms guide us into the internal disease. They're not in and of itself. So it's a mistake to say we're treating the symptoms because we're using the symptoms as a guide. I'll give you an example. I had a case today. The person is having a headache, problem with a headache. And I was discussing the case with somebody else. And we looked at the symptoms that were coming up and at the remedies that were coming up. And this person is dealing with a lot of financial stress. The person that I discussed the case with, the other homeopathy, says, do you notice that all the remedies that are coming up are remedies that are stress remedies? And it was very interesting. And he asked me, from what I know of this patient, if the financial stress was cleared, would he feel physically better? And I said, I'm pretty sure of it. Let the symptoms be your guide. So 13, we're saying the disease is not separate from the living whole. The disease is all part and parcel. And everything curable makes, in 14, everything curable will make itself known in some shape or form. And 15, again, brings us back. It's the vital force. It's all in the vital force. The secret is the vital force. The organism is the material instrument of life. No vital force, no life. And no organism, no vital force. That's our existence on this earth. And right, that's when we brought in the dialogue between body and soul. So six. So again, just as in aphorism 6, our focus was funneled into looking at what has changed, what is no longer healthy in our patient, what's the totality of disease symptoms. These ones are focusing us into the vital force,
mm-hmm.
all the time, to the vital force. This is what we need to be looking towards. We're using the symptoms as a guide. We're treating the immaterial vital force that's producing them. Here again, in 16 and in 17, he's hammering home the same point. It's the vital force.
Mm-hmm.
That's our patient. That's who we're looking at. When the disease symptoms ease off, then we know that the vital force is restoring itself to health.
Carefully observing and investigating physician as fully as was requisite in order to enable him to cure. It's been revealed. 16?
He included 16 and 17. It feels like these songs where you have, one man went to mow a meadow. I'm not sure that one's a known one in,
I don't know that one.
In America. But if we do a speedy version of what we did just now, we are here to cure. Cure is rapid, gentle, permanent. This is how we do it. Look for anything that could be preventing cure. Look for the patient's background to see something about how he lives in order to see what could be preventing cure or causing disease. Focus into the disease picture, what's changed from the healthy picture. Use the symptoms as a guide. The symptoms are expressing the vital force. So the symptoms will guide us to the remedy. The vital force is essential for life. In order to fulfill a higher purpose. No vital force, no life. When someone falls ill, it's the vital force that's sick and expressing its disease through the symptoms. When we use the symptoms as our guide and they clear, we know something is going on in the vital force. Everything curable will show itself through the symptoms. And again, focus on the vital force. That's where the answers are. The symptoms are guiding us towards the vital force, and if we understand that the disease is dynamic, then we're in the clear.
Vera, this bird's eye view has been a very valuable lesson, and I know that I will go back to it often to keep me right thinking. Perhaps we'll do this type of summary as we continue reading the next set of aphorisms. Tomorrow, we do have a day off from study, and when we come back again, we will pick up on aphorism number 18. We want to wish everyone a fruitful week of learning. We're going to end the show a few minutes early today. Take care, and we will see you the next time. Don't forget to take the Organon off the shelf and read it. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Debbie. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.